Ready for an invasion? It's the Pitch Invaders Podcast. And now, your hosts, Tom Quinlan, Brian Speaks, and Will Blasini.
Yo!
Good morning, Mr. Quinlan.
Good morning, Mr. Blasini.
How are you?
Well, and you?
I'm great. Dandy on this snow-covered day here in New England.
It's snow, but there's snow in Quincy. Why did that happen? How does that happen? This is the only place in the world, I feel. Oh, not really the only place in the world.
I was going to say.
Yeah, that plenty
of
places.
You need to have visited a lot of places before you can make a statement as bold as that one.
Fair enough, but in terms of weather being weird, there's no place that's more obscure and more bipolar in weather patterns than New England.
This is true, but that's why we stay. We love it. I love the uncertainty coming into every single week. There could be a rainstorm. There could be a snowstorm. You could have leaves falling. You could have all sorts of crazy things happening. That's why I love New England. It's a beautiful place.
It's a beautiful place. It's also a crazy place, which you just alluded to.
It is a very crazy place. And it's also a brilliant place to be watching football now, apparently.
Yeah.
All of a sudden,
all these New England fans want to go to New York.
Post-Nichols era.
I tweeted this out the other day. Brian Bolello could probably sell out Red Bull Arena if he wanted to. I mean, there's more New England fans going to this game, apparently, than New York fans.
Well, that's not true at all. That's not what's going to happen. New York is going to show up in force. There's certainly a lot of New England fans going. I was talking with Mr. Speaks the other day, and who's not here. Very sad.
We'll
there's one less
second.
Beard in the studio, and now that makes basically zero beards in the studio. But he mentioned to me that there was over 800 of the Rev supporters going down in buses and stuff. So that's a fair amount. That's a nice amount of guys going down there. And ladies. Ladies can be Rev supporters, too.
Brian's not here because we have to splice together yesterday's show with today's show. We can't explain it. It just happened. There it goes.
We can explain it. Yesterday, Brian had a little bit of a mishap on his way over to the studio. It involved a tire,
yep,
a loss of a tire,
a picture,
and a pothole. Tom tweeted out a picture. And then it also involved 45 magical moments of us playing the worst game of Keepy Uppies in the Citizens Bank parking lot,
yep,
while we waited for a guy that spent 30 seconds lifting up the car, unscrewing all the bolts and putting on the little donut tire, which I have to say is probably the most amusing tire in all of existence.
Oh, yeah. Because
the donut tire.
It weebles wobble, but they don't fall.
And it's sadly not even edible. I wish, after you use it to help get you wherever you're going, you could just take it off, put your new tire on, and just...
Just watching somebody's car, it's just like watching them roll down the road with a donut on their car. It's just like it's watching one of those things rock back and forth, and you're just waiting for it to just boop.
Have you ever seen a car with all four tires being donuts?
No, that wouldn't sound very safe at all.
That is a go-kart. That's what they are. We should start driving go-karts. We should make a campaign, donuts for everyone in this country.
By the way, Bolello tweeted out on his Twitter account 18 hours ago, so I guess that's yesterday, that they'll provide buses for up to 1,100 people.
Wow. Interesting, seeing as how I'm pretty sure New York is not going to be selling that many away tickets. But you know what? There can be a lot of sleeper fans. New York fans, watch out. There's going to be sleeper New Englanders all around you coming up.
Absolutely. This is going to be great. I hope LA has the same kind of turnout from the away supporters with Seattle.
You know what I mean?
Does travel well.
Seattle's going to show up to LA in force. It's going to feel like a Seattle Sounders home game.
Do you think that many people will be there?
Oh, my. It's Seattle. I've seen games in San Jose in which they send like an army down there, enough guys to just knock out everyone in the San Jose Stadium, the Buckshaw. But it's going to be entertaining. I personally have tickets in the Red Bull supporter, so I am the traitor in the booth today. I am your Benedict Arnold, so to speak, which is okay because I'm not about to defend Benedict Arnold. Never mind. Moving on to a new topic.
No, you are the Benedict Arnold, though. You are, because you come to New England. You praise the glory of living in this beautiful land. And then you have the audacity to tell me and everybody else that you and Red Bull Nation will conquer in the end. You know?
Me and Red Bull Nation will not just conquer. Me and Red Bull Nation are married at the hip for
the Viking
now
Army.
And eternity. I am not a Viking Army member. No, this is not true.
Even though, you know what? It's nice to hear
Empire
that.
I'm an Empire supporter.
I'll tell you what, because I've supported. I wish Brian was here because he could speak more on supporters culture. The Riders and the Rebellion, you know, I've always heard rumors and stuff that, you know, they never get along and you know, there's always a separation between them. But I heard there's no separation worse than the supporters' gripe down in New York with the Viking Army and just the inner workings with that. I don't want to, like, spend an entire show on it, but I just find it fascinating that if you're an entire fan base, you know, you have to be sectioned off and there can't be these, at least for a game, a unit of people that just stand up and just go ape. You know what I mean? Just go absolutely nuts. And it's not about always, but just having fun in the crowd and stuff. You know what I mean? If the game is becoming more than just what's going on in the stands, then that's just stupid.
Well, yeah, obviously, but you're always going to have these little spats in between people that evolve into, you know, groups of people. You know, one of my favorite sayings is never underestimate the power of a stupid people in large groups. Because it's like, you know, they can turn the tide and they can make a whole group of people feel a sentiment that they don't necessarily share. You know, it's so possible to escalate situations, and their examples are rife throughout history, rife. But I personally can't speak to any of the issues in the New England supporters groups or the Red Bull supporters groups.
I can't speak to them either. I've just heard rumors
that,
and stuff, you know what I mean?
I'm not that entwined with the thing, with the inner goings of those fan groups.
With the thing. I'm not involved with that thing.
I'm not involved.
I don't do that.
That thing.
You're going to make another song out of every
dude,
little word.
Every moment is worth singing. I saw a report in a science ish magazine that said science-ish, I don't remember
National
what
Geographic?
It was. No, it was not National Geographic. It said that if you an
that
individual who sings anywhere between 5 to 10 minutes a day out loud is more likely to tack on an extra 3 to 5 years at the end of their life. Because singing out loud for yourself, not for anyone else, but for yourself, is good for the soul. Fun Friday fact.
It is a fun Friday
That's
fact.
A triple F alliteration for you, mother. Drop the mic time. All right, we should probably
Are you
move
happy?
On to football.
Because you weren't here actually on Tuesday, though.
I wasn't. I set my alarm for 7 p.m., as you guys love to point out in the Twittosphere. But, I forgot to slide the little bar on my iPhone 4 all the way to the right. That signifies that the alarm is actually set. So I woke up at 11:11, funny enough. It was a weird time to wake up. And I
did
was like,
wish come
oh,
true?
No. No, my wish didn't come true. I didn't get to wake up in pod, so it failed. But I wished for a better day after that, and that didn't also happen. The day got worse. Tuesday was a terrible day.
I think 11,
and it all started with
thing.
Not showing up to the pod in the morning. So I think I'm going to see a connection here. Whenever I don't pod, I have a bad day. So I must now pod as much as possible.
That's true. You can't miss anything right now because, I mean, this is as good as it gets for MLS.
Yeah.
I mean, you got the conference finals. So, I mean, we talked it to death on Tuesday. We could talk about it more next week. But initially, what are your thoughts with the two matchups that we have here and the four teams remaining?
All right. Well, I don't want to talk too much about this because we have plenty of time to talk about it next week.
We also have Wilson Gibbons coming on the Today Show, too.
And we have Wilson Gibbons coming on the show. But my points are, yeah, I know. I had to reiterate. There's an echo in this place. But so what I have to say is that New York has beaten the Revolution 2 times this season. Granted, you didn't have this little, you know.
We didn't have Jermaine Jones.
You didn't have this Jermaine Jones guy showing up, whoever he is. And then you also, and the other thing on the other side of that is that New England has beaten New York in the playoffs the previous 3 times, 2007, 2005, and 2003. So history in the playoffs is on the side of the Revolution, but history of the immediate nature in this season is on the side of the Red Bulls. I'm not going to pick a winner, and I'm not going to go into a deep argument right now. We'll talk about the rest of this next week. But my first thoughts is, it's a really great toss-up in the air question of who actually is going to win this, because I think it's going to be a phenomenal two legs.
Yeah, I completely agree. When you look at the star power that's on the field, you have the present and the past for New York that's out there with Thierry Henry, who's playing like a former shell. Like, he's playing like he was at points with Arsenal. With in these two game spans, he's really turned it up to another level, and is making. He's making people pay attention and watch. There's more Revs fans that are very nervous now about the threats Thierry Henry present more than ever.
Should be.
I mean, the guy is, above all else, he's beyond a world-class player. So you have that. But you also have the future on the field as well. And when you look at New England. So from a national stage, including the fact that there is no real rivalry built yet between New England and New York in the soccer realm, it's the perfect time.
You want to push this rivalry, don't you?
I want to see a regional rivalry between New York and New England in soccer. Because there's no... Hold on. Because there's no...
Wait for NYCFC.
But there is no rivalry regionally right now between New York and Boston. The Yankees and the Red Sox are not going to be the top two teams in the AL, yet alone. Neither one of those two teams will be good for a while. So that rivalry, which was so good in the mid-aughts, 2003, 04, whatever, gone. The Bruins, who are they going to be rivals with in New York and New Jersey? You going to tell me the Bruins and the Islanders got a rivalry? No. You going to tell me the New York Rangers and the Bruins got a rivalry? Maybe back in the 70s. Not today. Not the Devils and the Bruins. You going to tell me... either Brooklyn or New York have a rivalry with the Celtics right now, especially where those three franchises are? Terrible. No, I mean, the Jets and the Patriots, come on, the Patriots are going to win the division every year as long as Tom Brady's quarterback. And the Jets are, look at their record.
Yeah, no one needs to say much.
So all that remains is the sport of soccer, that you have two teams that are very good in New England and New York, who rarely meet in the playoffs and have rarely gotten a chance to evolve into two rivals that can hate that just don't coexist. Like for years, it's always been New York and DC, as you and I have talked about before, and you talked to me a lot about yesterday.
It will forever be New York and DC.
But Pecky and Heaps have shown on the sidelines they're not fans of each other. So, I think from that aspect, plus the players that you have, plus the rising supporters groups in both New England and New York, it's the perfect time for both markets to capitalize on, you know, trying to grow at least the interest between between the common sports fans in those areas.
I mean, it's a possibility, but, you know, the thing that makes rivalries great is that they just don't happen overnight. Can it start? Sure it can, but I want to see, there needs to be more games between these two guys in which you see heated encounters, not just on the field, but off the field, before the game and after the games. That's what really brings a rivalry. In the DC-New York rivalry, there's so many instances of each other's group fan bases just sticking it to each other before games, during games, and even after games, regardless of the result. And the same thing happens on the field between the players. If there is a level of intensity that can be felt in all camps, organization from the top down, between these two teams, then yes, a rivalry will develop. It can't be something that's forced, and it can't be something that's, you know, it's not just going to appear. It's something that has to be created by everyone.
Fair. I guess I'm playing more of the media card here. I'm trying to hype it up more as a media member.
Yeah,
I am trying to hype it up as a media member.
There's other reasons to hype up this game, not just the rivalry aspect. It's going to be a great game.
It's going to be awesome.
You know, I'm expecting a plethora of goals over these two games, and it's going to be entertaining from that regard. And regardless of whether these two teams are rivals or become rivals, you know, we'll see. Anyways, we should probably talk about this more.
Yeah.
I don't want to keep on going down the New York New England, you know, train ride, because we can talk about this to death next week, which we will be. And it will be very heated.
We have a lot more New York people.
I'm trying to remain very calm and reserved right now for that discussion.
Fair enough. Do you think LA and Seattle though has the potential to be a quicker growing rivalry? Or do you think Seattle's so indebted with the Cascadia Cup and the rivalry that they got with Portland that, you know, L.A. and Seattle just always be a matchup of two classic heavyweights?
I mean, I think that first and foremost, your Cascadia Cups, the Vancouver versus Portland, Portland versus Seattle, Seattle versus, you know, those three teams, they're forever going to be gridlocked in rivalry for a long time. That as long as the MLS exists, those three teams are going to be in a rivalry. The difference is that when you have LA and Seattle going up against each other, I wouldn't consider it a rivalry. I would just consider it two really good players going up against, or two really good, you know, if you want to keep it there, boxing analogy, it's two classic heavyweights going up against each other, and I think that's the extent of it. I don't see a rivalry developing between these teams. You know, there's not a lot of blood. The most intense rivalry is a very professional coaching rivalry between Ziggy Schmidt and Bruce Arena, who are the old dogs of the MLS. Yeah. And the two of them, you know, they're not negative towards each other, but they certainly are competing against each other to have one of the best MLS records of all time, which is what the two of them are continually playing for,
mm-hmm,
or coaching for.
It's well put. I don't think we need to say anything more on that. You know, can we just wait till Tuesday?
Yeah.
All right.
What's next? Tom, throw it at me.
You know what? Next is talking to Wilson Gibbons. You know what? We got the U.S. playing at 2:45 today on ESPN, four-letter network. And a shout-out to Taylor Twellman, who just signed an 8-year extension.
Shout
with
out.
The Mickey Mouse ears.
I gotta love the T-12s. Gotta love T-12s.
Let's welcome in our friend now, freelance soccer journalist and lover of the beautiful game like we do here on the pod, getting ready to invade the pitch with us on the Allied Healthcare Insurance Expert Hotline. It's Wilson Gibbons. Wilson, welcome, welcome, welcome. How are we doing?
Great, man. Thank you guys so much for having me on the pod. Really looking forward to breaking down this U.S.-Colombia and obviously the Ireland friendly.
Yeah, it's, we have that to talk about. You also very invested in Copa America and obviously the U.S. in 2016. For those soccer fans who already know, we'll host it, so we'll talk about that with you as well. A lot of soccer stuff that we want to get to with today, Wilson. And as you said, let's start off right there. 2:45 on the four-letter network, ESPN today. USA in Colombia, in Fulham, in Craven Cottage. Should be a fantastic afternoon.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Craven Cottage, just atmospherically, is one of the best stadiums left in England. You know, we all know that it's one of the few that hasn't really been renovated to such a full extent as, for example, Wembley Stadium or Anfield even. So Craven Cottage really still has that sort of old school, you know, turn of the 20th century, real like industrial gritty feel, and it lends itself to obviously tremendous football matches.
It's also the people around there, too, are something to behold. I was listening to a couple of radio interviews this week, and all I kept on hearing is about how not only passionate the people were, but how connected the players were to the people of the community as well. Like Brian McBride would talk about walking to the stadium. You know, they'd get dropped off a couple of blocks away, and then they'd walk into the stadium a couple hours beforehand with the people, and they would just get a sense of what they were playing for that day. So playing in that old retro, because, I mean, now that there's this bigger emphasis on soccer and the fact that we have an American club playing in pretty much what usually is a Barclays Premier League stadium, what type of sense and atmospheric feel do you think these guys are going to get for the game? And how do you think this is going to attract them for future decisions?
Well, I mean, for starters, you know, you look at the way that the MLS has sort of built up its own stadium infrastructure. And so on the one hand, while it's really great that more and more MLS teams, I think about two-thirds now, have their own stadium, they're all pretty new, right? And so MLS teams are striving and succeeding to a certain degree in creating an authentic, unique environment within their own stadiums, right? But what the players are going to get when they go to Craven Cottage is an established sort of old school feel for the game of football. And, you know, there is something to be said for the connection between Fulham and its fans, because you look at a team like Chelsea, for example, also in London, had their stadium Stamford Bridge renovated, right? And it's become this tremendously globalized brand, whereas Fulham, for better or worse, because they have yet to sort of be purchased by an eccentric billionaire, have yet to renovate the stadium, and so they still have that old school feel, the feeling where, you know, everyone is so close to the field, you know, they're all packed in, and so it should be just a tremendous, tremendous atmosphere to play in.
And we're also talking about full America here. I mean, this is a stadium and a team that traditionally has had a lot of great American players there. We saw Clint Dempsey in his heyday when he was young and gunning Texas.
Best season of his career, scoring 20 goals for Fulham. Yeah, that was an incredible year.
And we also saw the man himself, Brian McBride, as Tom mentioned before, was also there.
McBride's pub right inside of the stadium.
McBride's pub, yeah, right there. And there's also been a couple others. I know Carlos Bocanegra is there, so there's a great history of Americans there.
We have an American there right now.
We have an American there right now. Do you think that means coming into this game that we are going to have a pro-American atmosphere? Are we going to be hearing USA chants all game long?
Well, there's certainly more of a connection between the United States and England as opposed to Colombia and England, right? I mean, and obviously there is a rich sort of tradition, as you guys so eloquently put, between Fulham and the United States. I mean, look, man, if I had the money and the time, you know, I'd be buying a ticket and trying to get a flight over there. So
I think that makes all three of us.
Yeah, right, exactly. And so I would be pretty surprised if it wasn't at least a little pro-American. But, you know, that being said, Colombia has a lot of really big stars, some of whom play in the Premier League, with the notable exception of James Rodriguez being the star Galactico. So, you know, I think people are just going to see a good soccer match. But that being said, I'd be pretty surprised if there wasn't a pro-American atmosphere.
Hopefully we just get a good game overall. I mean, it's, we had a good showing of friendlies here in the United States, but just to continue to grow the brand of soccer, it'll be nice for the American public to see Craven Cottage fill today, watching our U.S. boys taking on the Colombians. And as we talk with Wilson Gibbons, freelance journalist right now, I want to get his thoughts on what you think is going to be Jurgen's starting 11 today and what type of formulas you'd like to see the mad scientists mix up here.
Well, you look at the roster that Jurgen sort of announced pretty recently, and it's a really interesting mix of youth and of experience and of some stuff in between. And this is a really sort of interesting juncture for the U.S. men's national team, because it is a passing of the torch to a certain extent. You know, obviously Clint Dempsey's not totally over the hill, but he is on the wrong side of 30, I believe, at this point. And you have to wonder how much he's really going to feature as the sort of creative fulcrum going forward. And so there's a couple players who I wanted to highlight in looking at who were included on this roster. One of them is Bobby Wood. He's a 21-year-old Hawaiian-born American who is currently playing on 1860 Munich. There's also Timmy Chandler, probably most famous for snubbing the U.S. during the last World Cup and refusing to play on our team and sort of giving Jurgen the cold shoulder. He's been included as a fullback, and I think that's a direct result of DeMarcus Beasley, you know, just at this point becoming too old to play, although, man, he was pretty serviceable in the World Cup at the age of 34, so, you know, who knows with that. But Timmy Chandler's another young guy we're looking at. Rubio Ruben, who's playing for Utrecht in the Netherlands. You know, he's someone who I would want to look at. He's 18 and getting real burn on that team. And then there's also Alfredo Morales, who plays for FC Ingolstadt Sorry, I'm just butchering these names here.
That's all right.
But these are all guys who are 24 and under, whose names I didn't see during the last World Cup. And I'm really curious to see how much Jurgen decides to try to integrate these guys going forward, because, you know, you look ahead to 2016, you know, these guys who are 24 are going to be 26, entering the prime of their career, having played a couple years of European soccer. And so it'll be interesting. In terms of the starting lineup, I think it'll be pretty representative of the roster as a whole, as in you'll see Jurgen take a couple chances on some young players in the back four and also going forward, but then you'll also see some MLS stalwarts. You know, I'd be surprised if Jermaine Jones didn't play, despite the fact that he has a game against the Red Bulls. I think you'll see Zusi feature a little bit. But this is a really interesting opportunity for Jurgen to sort of tinker and see what players can really do what going forward for him. So I'm definitely really excited about it.
And Jurgi Love is tinkering indeed. You mentioned the absence of Clint Dempsey in this, and the other absence I want to point out is no Michael Bradley, who isn't playing in any MLS games, and also no Tim Howard, although Tim Howard is in the midst of the EPL season, so that's understandable, but no Bradley there. One of the things that I was wondering about is Jurgen really trying to send a message to the old guard that their time is done by omitting some of these players?
Well, just playing devil's advocate real quickly, too, you got to remember Bradley also have recent foot surgery.
Foot surgery,
as well.
It's true. But I agree
with you, though. There are some guys that are on the hot seat right now that might have their international days numbered.
And on the other side of it, he puts up Miguel Ibarra and Jordan Morris,
right,
the Stanford prodigy, college
guy.
So we're looking at a lot of really young guys, and DeAndre Yedlin, who's linked to Tottenham. So is this team that Jurgen has comprised a way of saying to the U.S. soccer prospects going forward, we are moving towards the future, these guys are the past, they're done?
Well, you know, I think there's, I don't think it's an absolute. I think on the one hand, you know, Jurgen has to be pragmatic, and he says to himself, all right, I got to put a starting 11 on the field who isn't going to lose 4-0 to Colombia, right? So that's where the experience of a guy like Jermaine Jones comes in, someone who's played holding midfielder for really good teams in Germany, Schalke, and is now, you know, doing work with the Revolution in New England. So, but then on the other hand, he knows he needs creative talent going forward. I mean, to a certain extent, it's not really a choice. You know, Father Time is undefeated in this game of soccer.
Sports in general.
Yeah, so Clint Dempsey's days are numbered, whether we like it or not. You know, I love Clint, but, you know, he's clearly lost a step, and he's still a great player, but, man, there's a reason that his jersey says Xbox, you know, Seattle Sounders, and not, you know, Tottenham Hotspur or Fulham. So we'll see. I think Jurgen's really got to take some risks, and looking at the roster, I think he's obviously more than prepared to do it. So we'll see.
Captain Deuce is getting old.
And it's a shame. And, you know, DeMarcus Beasley, Jermaine Jones, obviously Donovan was sort of preemptively cut off from U.S. soccer, Tim Howard. So there are a lot of holes for this USA team to fill, and Colombia represents a really good test to see whether some of these youngsters can step up and fill the void.
And it's the perfect team to start looking forward to bigger competitions and playing in bigger matches, because right now this team, Colombia, is ranked third in the world. Wilson Gibbons, freelance soccer journalist, and the U.S. sits 20 spots below at 23. So how does it, and listen, the FIFA rankings are not really reliable. We can't really say that they are.
We can't trust FIFA with a lot of things.
We can't trust FIFA with a lot of things. And, you know, maybe we'll discuss that later. But in terms of who they're going to be seeing today, the United States boys, what Colombians are you seeing that are going to present a problem for Jurgen's team?
And it's okay to say all of them.
It's okay.
Yeah, well, the short answer is all of them. But obviously, you know, you look at a guy like James Rodriguez, and I've only seen the only Real Madrid game I caught this year was the Clásico, where they beat Barca 3-1.
Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah, anytime, man. But, you know, he looked really comfortable as an inverted right winger during that game. You know, he didn't make any real spectacular plays, but he was incredibly decisive. He was really able to create a lot of havoc, And, you know, I feel sorry for whoever's playing left fullback for the United States, because they are going to have their hands absolutely full with this guy. And even though you won't see Falcao on the field, which, you know, part of me is kind of relieved, but the other part is a little sad because he's obviously such a prolific player, El Tigre.
Yeah.
But Hummets is, for me, just the perpetual danger man, the guy who you got to have one guy on and two or three guys lurking behind, because you know the first guy's getting beat. So he's a guy who I'm really looking for to just put on an absolute clinic.
And it's even more terrifying the further down the Colombian roster that you go. You look at Jackson Martinez, who plays for Porto. Juan Quintero also plays for Porto. Juan Cuadrado, who had an unbelievable World Cup for Fiorentina.
He really did. He looked great.
Yeah, he had phenomenal. He toyed with defenders left and right and midfielders, and he looked unstoppable. You have Carlos Sanchez, who's been playing for Aston Villa in the EPL. He's been having a good season. You have the old man, Freddy Garin, for Inter. You have Christian Zapata, Pablo Armero, the AC Milan defenders. And then, despite the fact that they don't have El Tigre, they still do have Carlos Bacca, who's been playing unbelievable football in Spain for Sevilla. So, this team could hurt you in multiple areas.
It could be an ugly game.
How do we – what do you see as the keys to success against Colombia? What is Jurgi Love thinking about? How do I break these guys down?
Well, more than anything, you got to be able to possess the ball a little bit. If we spend 90 minutes chasing around this Colombia 11, we're going to be exhausted by the hour mark, and we're just going to get lit up. So we've got to find a way, somehow, some way, between the old guard and these new youngsters to possess the ball a little bit. And I'm not even saying necessarily going forward. Mm. Obviously, that is something we need to do, right?
Win that would be games. Nice.
Got to create chances, right? But I'm just saying we need to be able to comfortably possess the ball, you know, for a good 45% of this game. Otherwise, because if you let these guys dance around for long enough, you know, they're going to find ways to break you down. So that's a key for me. You know, I look at that. The other key is, well, really for these old guys to sort of cover up some of the mistakes that these youngsters are inevitably going to make, right? Because even if you're playing in the Bundesliga B, or you know, you're playing in the top league in the Netherlands or wherever, you know, you're an up and coming player, the game is slower. And when you step onto the field against this Colombia team of seasoned European veterans, they play at a certain pace. And so there's going to be mistakes. And so it's going to be how we respond to those mistakes, how we react to those mistakes, and how we're able to cover for one another's mistakes. So it's going to be a tough game, but it'll be a really interesting benchmark for this U.S. team, particularly looking forward to the Copa America in 2016, because you know that Colombia is one of the teams, one of the shortlisted teams to really compete for that trophy.
We hope. I mean, it would be nice to win on American soil. I mean, you think about the fact that the U.S. won't have a World Cup for quite some time, and the Olympics aren't coming here for quite some time, so the next big international competition on U.S. soil is Copa America, 2 years away, and it'll be absolutely, it'll be a blast, and hopefully, I really do hope Gillette throws a bid in to get one of the games here, but that's a side note. But looking at 2015 Copa America, because that is coming up, and the U.S. doesn't qualify for that one, but you have a lot of great countries who do, and who are Uruguay is the current title holder, Chile is the host nation, but you have Brazil, who's showing that they're still a world power, even after getting dominated in the semifinal of the World Cup.
Are they still showing that they're a world
power? I would say so. I would say Neymar is still pretty damn good. Argentina, we obviously know how good they are. But, tell us about, because, I mean, we don't have what the Europeans have. Like, they have Euro 2016, and that is a much larger event than Copa America, at least in my mind. You could tell me if I'm wrong, but, what are we expecting to see on a showcase level from these teams, and how important, really, is this?
Well, every international friendly is a chance for you to not only compete against high-quality opposition, but it's a chance for you to see where you stack up in the pecking order of your own, of your own national team. So this, in terms for the U.S., I think it's a little more important than it is for Colombia, because for Colombia, you know, they know what they've got. They've got a really established core of really solid players and some really, really exceptional talent going forward. So for the U.S., this is a chance for Klinsmann to see, you know, who can really stack up at the end of the game or at the end of the day, you know, when the ref blows the whistle, who put in a quality 90 minutes, who tackled well, who was able to play two-touch in the midfield when it was congested, who was able to win 50-50 balls against these big Colombian midfielders and these very skilled Colombian midfielders. So for me, you know, I if I'm Jurgen, I'm paying a very close attention to what's happening on the field today, because this is as good a dress rehearsal almost as you're going to get for a tournament like that, where you're playing a high-level opposition in a neutral environment. And it'll be really interesting to see, you know, which one of our guys shows up and who's able to make a play.
Mm-hmm. 2015 Copa America, though, is there early things that you're paying attention to that you're interested by?
Yeah, I'm really interested to see if, you know, Radamel Falcao is going to be healthy enough to play. Because for me, if Colombia really wants to compete and actually get over the hump against a team like a Brazil, who has a really solid midfield and defense, despite the 7-0 showing against Germany, you know, you look at a team like Argentina, and everyone always talks about their, you know, their Kun Agüeros, their, you know, Angel Di Marias, and justifiably, because those guys are world class. But Argentina showed us during the World Cup that they're more than just Messi, that they're more than just, you know, this blitzing attack going forward. They have a lot of really sort of fundamentally sound and principally sound defenders. And so if Colombia wants to compete and really get over the hump against these teams, Radamel Falcao, Tigre, really needs to be in good form. And thus far, you know, he's had knee injuries, he's got this calf injury now. You know, he hasn't really been in top form. He scored, I think, only one goal, maybe gotten a couple assists for Man United. He's kind of a spotty player for them. And I really hope that he's able to sort of break into the starting 11 consistently and form what should be a really lethal pairing with Robin Van Persie, you know?
Yeah. We'll certainly see. I mean, hopefully he comes back. I would love to see him get back to his scoring ways. I've seen him in more pictures with attractive women than seen goals of him so far.
Yeah,
this season.
Exactly, man.
So, like, you know, El Tigre is doing El Tigre, I guess. But, you know, I would have to say, curious as to what you would pick as a sleeper team, possibly in the Copa 2015, to win it all. I mean, personally, I want to go with Chile. They have
the host nation.
I have a really strong feeling that they're gonna upset absolutely everyone and take home the title. But do you think there's someone else maybe that could surprise, or are you going with the Chile?
I mean, Chile is from in terms of a sleeper team, a pretty obvious sleeper team. They're someone I'm definitely looking at. I mean, you know, you can never sleep on Mexico. They're always around in tournaments. They always show up in tournaments. They're pretty well organized. You know, we'll see if Rafa Marquez decides to step on anyone's toes and give away dumb penalties. But, you know, for me, it's tough to bet against Chile. I mean, they played Brazil really well. You know, they're really quick going forward. That the goal that they scored against Brazil, I don't know if you guys remember, but it all happened in Brazil's defensive third. They were dispossessed. It was a quick move from Alexis Sanchez, and he puts it away, you know, just buried it. And so going forward, Colombia can be real, Chile can be really dangerous. And they're really good at turning you over. They got a lot of quick guys. They got a lot of skill. And, you know, Arturo Vidal is just a world-class midfielder. And
anytime
you get a guy like that, a world-class playmaker, a box-to-box guy, a 90-minute guy who plays really high-level soccer all year round for a big-time club, in this case Juventus, you know, you've got a chance. And, man, you know, Arsene Wenger is definitely picking Chile because Alexis Sanchez has just been an absolute revelation for the Gunners. I mean, he has kept that team afloat when you know, they're basically just a defensive sieve, and it's Sanchez and pray for rain. So Chile is going to be a really good team and a force to be reckoned with.
For sure, and let's not even forget about Claudio Bravo. The keeper for Chile is the Barcelona keeper this year, who had that phenomenal start to the season, breaking all those those records without preventing anyone from scoring on him for all those minutes. So they even have a defense, and there's also Marquisio Isla, plays on defense there for a QPR. So this Chile team looks really good, and you're right. Mexico, we never really know what Mexican team is going to show up because
you don't. But you know they're always going to be there. They're pesky, right? You know they're good at you know they're always there's always a very sound team in terms of tackling. They tackle well. You know they're going to work hard. The fans are going to be there. You know I was lucky enough to get to go to the World Cup in Brazil, and some of the loudest fans were Mexican fans. And those were games where Mexico wasn't even playing. So, you know, let alone when they're playing a meaningful game. Yeah, I mean, you love to see it. The sombreros, the mariachi stuff. It was awesome. It was so awesome.
We love to see it. So, bringing it back a bit stateside, we're going to leave South America for a bit. We're going to bring it back to the United States. You are a Red Bulls fan.
Here we go.
Oh yeah. Wait, are they playing a big game this week?
I believe they are
next week.
And I can't wait to watch. Do you have thoughts on this Red Bulls New England game, real quick?
Well, first and foremost, for all those who say that the MLS isn't exciting, you're wrong. You're flat wrong. It's one of the few football leagues in the whole world where there is true and utter parity. I mean, You look at a team like the Red Bulls, they barely snuck into the playoffs, right? There was questions whether they're even going to make it. There's all this stuff about, is Thierry coming back? Is he leaving? And the MLS as a league is so exciting because you never know who's going to peak at the right time. You never know, who's going to start playing well when it really matters. And both of these teams, the Red Bulls and the Revolution, are a perfect example of why the MLS is awesome and why parity in a sports league can be so exciting. Because what, the Reds lost their first 8 matches and then won 10 in a row or something like that. And, you know, the Red Bulls were basically a 500 team until all of a sudden, you know, they turned it on. And so I think both of these teams, it should be a great match. They're both, in a sense, teams of destiny. And you don't really see that too often, right? It's often, you know, the David and the Goliath. But these are two teams that are kind of both Davids, to continue the analogy. And so it should be a hell of a game. They're both playing great soccer. And I think between these two legs, you know, whichever team can break 4 goals, I think is going to be the winner. If you can score more than 2 goals on average in these two legs, I think you're going to walk away with a chance to win the MLS Cup.
I would say they're both Goliaths.
Yeah, well, now, but they certainly weren't. Yeah, but they certainly weren't when the season started. I mean, True. If you ask anybody when the MLS season started, they'd say, well, if anybody beats Sporting KC, that'll be huge, right? But that wasn't even really part of the conversation. So, pretty interesting, and I think it's a greater commentary on the excitement and parity of the MLS.
Freelance soccer journalist and lover of the beautiful game, Wilson Gibbons, providing some great commentary here today on the pod. Enjoy the afternoon, my friend. Go USA.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thank you guys so much for having me on. And like you said, go USA.
We'll have to talk some more, too, when we get closer to kickoff for the second leg for New York and New England. I'll let you build up for the first leg, get you excited for it. And then once that final whistle blows, I want you back here that first Tuesday. All right, let's book it right now.
All right, I'll either be laughing or crying, so it'll be fun either way.
All right. Sounds good. Wilson Gibbons, thanks so much, brother.
All right, thank you guys.
Wilson Gibbons, smart man.
Smart man.
Freelance journalist.
Knows the stuff about the football.
Just goes around. Went to Brazil. I wish I could live that life.
The ball is round.
The ball is round, and it keeps on rolling. We keep on rolling on this show.
Ah, like what you did there. Ah, you little turn of phrase, man. Where'd you learn that?
I hung out with some Cheshire Academy kids when I was growing up.
God, that sounds like an unscrupulous bunch. You should stop hanging around with them. I'm going to advise you. It is detrimental to your mental and physical health, as long as you're including your spiritual health as well. So protect all three of those. Protect the trifecta.
Carl Sutherland joined us yesterday on the pod. As we said, Brian Speaks was with us yesterday. We did do a pod yesterday, but for technical reasons, we had to ax it, unfortunately. But we do have the original interview with Carl Sutherland here, where we focus more on Lee Wynn and Jermaine Jones and the New England Revolution as a whole. So it's a great conversation with Carl. We hope you enjoy. Here it is.
Give it a listen.
Carl Sutherland of Soccer by Ivis. Carl, thanks for holding off, buddy. Thank you for understanding first world problems.
Welcome.
Hey, no problem, guys. It's my favorite time of the season. We got playoffs, MLS. Finally Lee Wynn gets his call up. Everything in the soccer world seems to be going good right now.
Everything
Indeed.
In the soccer world is great.
Yeah, it's a great
Especially
time
New England.
Of year.
I mean, you know, I think I heard you talk about it the other night when you were in with Jay's press conference. I think it was you, Carl, that asked about the atmosphere at Gillette. Before we talk about Lee and Jermaine, because that is a very important topic, especially considering it's been 7 years since Lee's gotten his call up, his last call up, excuse me. What have you thought about the evolution of a growing soccer base here in the region?
Yeah, you know, I've been covering the team since the tail end of the last, the glory years of Steve Nichol. When I think it's almost kind of like the Patriots, where fans came to expect, a trip to the MLS Cup or to the conference finals was a normal thing. And then I think they really didn't take the down years too well in the transition, It's showing now. It was intellectually a smart transition into building the team this way instead of I think Steve Nichol was more old school MLS team building and stuff, and the fans are really coming around again. It took a while to sell them, but I think definitely Jermaine Jones was the turning point where they finally said, ownership does care. They are trying to put a good product on the field. It's not just collecting their paychecks from the ticket sales and TV contracts and stuff like that. They actually want to win. But I think the fans are back. I think a lot of the negativity is gone. And you saw it just a few months ago back in the summer when there was the losing streak. It was, it's starting to creep back in, fire heaps and the team's just not being run the right way. But, they stayed the course. It's a front office and a coach that isn't too concerned with outside opinions, and they're being shown to be correct. And the fans just want a good product, and they're playing great, exciting soccer. And I think they're doing just fine in terms of enthusiasm, and it's only going to keep growing as they go deeper in the playoffs.
Are they going to be able to maintain this, you think, Carl? I mean, with the exception of the Kraft family, who, didn't grow up essentially playing soccer. I mean, they're in owners, and they've become great, smarter businessmen in the game as they've continually grown with this league. But they have the right soccer guys in place, building the right players, setting up the academy for the future in the right way. Does the people who run that aspect of the organization right now, do you think they've set up this organization to be as successful continuously through the years?
Yeah, the tough thing about soccer is there's that unpredictability of when a player does, you don't want him to do too well. Maybe Lee Wynn gets sold over the winter and that's, it stirs up the whole mix of players and who you got in your team. And in that sense, it's a little bit different in terms of team building. But I think, the best thing you can do is just find a solid platform to stand on. And they've decided, they made the smart, pragmatic move toward youth and just collecting assets. And I definitely think that, their academy system is rated, they've produced Diego Segundez and Scott Caldwell, but I don't know if it's rated as the most talented group of players, but it's rated as one of the best academies in terms of setup and what they're teaching and the experience that they're providing. And so I think they're taking a great approach of controlling what they can. And you never know what's injuries or you hope they can keep the core intact. But if they can't, I think they've got a solid idea of where to go from there.
You just mentioned Lee Wynn, and this I feel like is a perfect transition to talk about U.S. men's national team stuff. But before we even get into that, you mentioned something that I think is a good nugget in there for Revs fans to pay attention to. Do you think Lee Wynn leaves the Revs in January?
I don't. I think there's definitely going to. I think it's going to be a topic of conversation.
Do you think he gets a contract extension?
I think something probably happens. I got to be honest. I don't know the specifics of how many years he has left on this current deal. But I definitely think Lee Wynn's always been underpaid. I think it goes back to him going to Vietnam instead of coming back to MLS after he first tried to go to Europe. But I definitely think he's due for a raise probably, but I think the Revs have shown before, you see with Shaury Joseph, they didn't let him go to Celtic when they're after him, and with Dempsey there, and other players, Parkhurst and guys, they kind of cut their losses eventually. But I think if they have control, player control in terms of contract, they'll try to keep Lee Wynn, because they also know he's going to be great for marketing and selling tickets.
So Lee Wynn's making his return back to the U.S. men's national team after a 7-year hiatus. What do you expect his role is going to be with that national team?
Yeah, I think he'll see the field. I don't think he would have been, called in. At this point of the season, a crucial time for the Revs and in the MLS season, if Jurgen Klinsmann didn't intend to at least give him a few minutes, give him a look. I don't have any insider knowledge on this, but I'm imagining that because they've got the playoffs and maybe limit the risk and stuff like that he doesn't play the full game, maybe a half or something. Who knows? I saw Soccer by Ives Galarsip, put out what he thinks is going to be the starting lineup, and he had Lee Wynn on the bench and Mick Diskerud starting in that spot in midfield and alongside Bedoya and definitely I think he's gonna get a good chunk of playing time, whether it's the first or second half. I don't know if it makes too much of a difference. It'd be nice to see him out there with the starting 11 and to play with the top guys and see if he fits in with that group. It's exciting for him, and I think Revs fans are really excited because it's been a long time coming, and all it took was the best season for a midfielder ever in MLS to finally get him a look.
Is there anyone in particular you're looking forward to see Lee sync up with? I know on Tuesday, me and Tom were talking, and he was really excited to see any chemistry between Lee and Julian Green. Anyone in particular you're looking forward to with Lee?
I haven't thought about it too much with how Lee's gonna fit in there. I don't know how much he's ever played with any of these guys before, if he has familiarity with them. Jermaine Jones is probably going to be back in back at center back, and he'll be a ways away. So that chemistry and that partnership that they've kind of gained since he's been with the Revs, I don't think is going to do him too much in this role, because he'll be so far separated on the field. I'm just looking to see how he does out there. I think his game definitely is a game that fits with most players. He's unselfish, and he's got quick feet. He can play those combinations. So I think it's probably going to be a decent showing for him.
Carl Sutherland of Soccer by Ives joining us now. Also, you can catch him on Boston Magazine, Boston.com, and the Telegraph, the Worcester Telegraph out there. And we'll talk about the youth in a couple of minutes, because Carl has a lot of involvement with seeing the high school level of all aspects of sports. We'll get his thoughts on that and Diego Fagundes in a couple of minutes. But I want to get back to stay with Lee Wynn for a second here. And that is just looking at January and upcoming U.S. men's national team friendlies after this one. Where do you see Lee Wynn fitting into the U.S. in the future? And, how do you think that he's going to play a role in upcoming big tournaments?
Well, it's definitely interesting. it all depends on who Jurgen Klinsmann likes, because I don't think there's any standout. You look at, I mentioned Nick Sistrud. I think he's probably a little bit more of a, you know, Jurgen, I think, is looking definitely towards the next World Cup cycle and thinking that Nick's might be still a little more in his prime than Lee. Not to say Lee will be totally out of it, but it'll be early 30s by then. So, you know, who knows? I think he's definitely, if he can maintain his form, I think that he deserves to be in that mix. I think it's been, a long time coming that he's, probably for a few months now, he's kind of proven that he's that level of player. And assuming everything goes well coming up against Colombia and you see that he can handle that, I think he's definitely a candidate for the Gold Cup or something like that. And at this stage, maybe he can even grab one of the regular starting spots.
Looking at the youth of America, untapped Americans, Carl, that you haven't seen yet that you would like to see start getting integrated more into Jurgen's system, in particular, maybe more MLS players that he could start looking at?
Oh, you know, I don't keep too far spanning of a list of guys I don't see on the national team. I don't cover it as closely as I do with the Revs, but I've said before, I think maybe AJ Soares, it's time to start talking about him in the mix. I think Farrell, we talked about earlier in the season.
Absolutely.
He has the physical skills, definitely, but I think it's been kind of an up and down year for him, and he's maybe not in the
Revs?
Same type of form as Soares.
Sorry, Carl, but besides Farrell, what other Revs do you think could, potentially make this U.S. men's national team?
Scott Caldwell, Kellen Rowe. Charlie again?
Definitely Kellen Rowe, I think, is at that skill level. He's kind of a guy who plays in bursts a lot, and I don't know if he's I think he's still got a little bit of developing to do as a player to fit into the national team intensity of play and with him also, he's been great lately, but it seemed for a while that it was going to be a lost season. So we forget how quickly things change. And just earlier it was this Kellen Rowe stock was down, but it's looking back up. And he definitely has the creative mind and the passing skill and the finishing skill to fit into that mix. But it's tough. Maybe if he can keep carving out a role for himself on the wing, even though he's not a natural out there, that might help him, eventually get a role. And I think you mentioned Charlie Davies is playing himself into the mix again as a hard worker. He's been able to, really put in all the effort and get the run-in that he's wanted without having those muscle problems and those injury problems that he was struggling with when he first came with the Reds.
And clearly you've seen how stronger he's gotten, and just playing with guys that, Lee Wynn and Jermaine have obviously made Charlie look better on the field because he's able to find those spaces that maybe you wouldn't have been able to see when he first emerged here in New England. But he stayed confident, he held his faith, and you got to give him a tremendous amount of respect for staying above water when things could have gotten bad.
For Charlie, things already were bad.
And things were terrible.
We
got to
remember about this guy's past, that he had a really difficult time with that accident. He was on the stage to become one of our next great strikers, the next Josie Altidore. I was hopeful for that, and this accident took a lot of wind out of sails, and I'm really happy to see him coming back. One of the guys I was also thinking about the other day is Teal Bunbury. Is he slowly working his way into contention for possibly getting a call-up, getting more time, looking like he's going to be on Jurgen's radar anytime soon? Because I've seen a lot of great work from him this year, and I'm impressed.
Right, yeah. I was actually just going to bring him up. I think at this point, long-term, Kellen Rowe might be the better national team prospect.
Certainly.
But I think the way they're playing now, I think Teal Bunbury is playing more that type of style where he'd fit in, and he's been scoring. He's finally getting on board with that, and it's been an adjustment for him, but he's also been pretty great defensively. And I think, we mentioned Diego Fagundes, that's been one of his downfalls, really, is that he hasn't kind of matched the same type of quality on the defensive side of the field to be able to provide on the outside. And I think he's been really one of, there's been a few guys that have been really underrated this season. You've seen Storrs get his due recently, and I think we're finally starting to see Teal Bunbury get his, where he's put in a, you know, an underrated season, a good effort, and he's really been part of this chemistry and this mix of you know, getting them to where they are now.
Perfect transition for Diego Fagundes. I mean, because he had to fight for his spot. I mean, there was nothing you could do if you're Diego except just try to work hard in training. It's like he's getting the rookie treatment essentially right now, just because of, I mean, not his age, but just like where other players are technically advanced right now. He's just lagging in those areas, and you wonder about the confidence of a kid like him. How at 19 years old would you respond to that? Last year you're a superstar sensation. Last year everybody's saying that you're essentially America's Adnan Januzaj, that you're a future star sensation. You're going to be making all this money, and then this year you have the dip off that you do. But when you look at the numbers, there are some things masquerading Diego Fagundes. For example, he's second in team scoring this year, I still believe. He was at least in the top five. Assist-wise, he doesn't have the same production value, but he still can find those pretty channels to open up for guys like Charlie Lee and other attacking players. So I know we got two different opinions here when it comes to Fagundes. Carl, I'll let you speak first on him because, you know, as I said, you cover the high school sports around here. And I mean, you've known Diego for quite some time now. So, I mean, what do you have to say about his character and the way he's gone about things, really going off the radar and having to start again?
Yeah, you know, Diego is in the area that the Worcester Telegram covers. So I've been covering him since, you know, the Revs first signed him. And even before then, you know, I'd been hearing that he was you know, one of their top academy guys, and this was just when the academy was starting up. And you know, we talk about him being 19, but he's really at this point he's a professional, like a 24 or 25 year old would be. And one thing I've always admired with the Revs and Diego, and it goes up to, you know, to Mike Burns as well, is that they've never babied him. You know, this is a kid who was on you know, the 24 under 24 list. I think he was third or fourth or something like that. So there's still a high opinion of him around the league, but nothing's really nothing's given to him. It's always and he's just big on that you earn your minutes, and they haven't made any special cases for any of the players, and that includes their you know, their star winger who led the team in scoring last season. If he's not doing the job, then he's, you know, he's going to be on the bench. And but the thing that I think is interesting about it is that you don't see Diego pouting. I think he's shown a lot of maturity in how he transitioned to being a pro and now taking his lumps and stuff like that. And I think the thing that's different is that, you know, he had that breakout year last year, so maybe that does raise your confidence a little bit more to now that you're a national MLS star and stuff like that. But you know, I don't think he's gotten too inside of his own head, both in terms of being, you know, of thinking a lot of himself or of getting down on himself. I think he's pretty even keel for a 19-year-old kid, and I think the Revs still feel pretty comfortable about that situation. I don't have any, you know, Jay Heaps hasn't told me that or anything like that, but I think just from their history, they feel pretty good that Diego will understand that it's just a matter of right now, you don't want to mess with this lineup. There's two really good guys outside, and it you know, he just got pushed out of a, you know, a potential MLS Cup winning lineup, and there's definitely, he has the talent where he should have been in the mix this year, but it's just been a down year where I think it's been kind of the perfect storm of teams that focused in a little more on him, and he just never found that confidence and that scoring clip that he was last year. And I still think the future is bright, but I wouldn't start him at this point going forward. And I don't even know if he fits in. I think he, you know, definitely makes the bench, but I don't know if he fits into the substitution role where, you know, you like Daigo coming off the bench, and Newman found a versatile role there. And maybe he's the third sub, but who knows, depending on injuries and stuff. So he's really kind of been pushed to the fringe of the you know, the game day roster. But I definitely still think he's supposed to be a star, and he will be a big star in the next 2 years.
I hope he's not down on himself. I mean, because, you know, as you said, last season we've seen the talent, we saw the skill, we saw what he was able to do. In my mind, I almost feel like getting to the point where Teal Bunbury's at, where he was able to put in consistency from the beginning to the end of the season, that just comes with experience, on-field experience. And I think that showing up in a league, you know, it happens all the time across Europe. You see these players show up for a season, dazzle and bemuse all the fans in this, in the press and everything, and then fade away. And I think one thing that he needs to do is get some consistent playing time somewhere. And I don't necessarily think that he substitution role here in New England would be the best thing for his future. Would you like to see him go away somewhere and possibly pick up some playing time, whether that's on a loan
maybe that loan Sporting Lisbon? I mean, you just have that new affiliation. Doesn't that work out perfect for both sides?
Yeah, you know, maybe that works. I think definitely he's got a lot of local appeal, and in that sense they like to keep him around. I think you could also see maybe the formation or the roles that guys play switch around, you know, in the future, where I know Teal Bunbury definitely, you know, he reiterates this when you talk to him. I'm still a center forward. I'm just playing out on the wing because this is where they need me. And, you know, Kellen Rowe, ideally he likes to play centrally and, you know, kind of in the hole and stuff like that, rather than out on the wing. So, you know, maybe just by virtue of injuries or roster moves and stuff, that opens up something outside, because I do think that Diego is more of a natural winger than both Bunbury and Rowe. So, you know, I think he's probably here next season, but I do think, you know, alone is something that maybe they should consider, but I don't know if it's in his best interest. You know, what if he goes on loan and it doesn't go well and it takes him out of his comfort zone and he gets him even further, out of sorts? I think he's in a pretty good setup right now, and I think something probably opens for him in before next season starts.
All right, he's Carl Sutherland of the Worcester Telegraph and Gazette. You could also get him on Soccer by Ives. Follow him on Twitter, at Carl Sutherland, SETTERLUND. Big dog, we'll see you soon, all right?
All right, thanks. Take care.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Carl.
I know there is a lack of love when it comes to Diego in certain areas of this room. And I didn't get into it as much because...
You mean this side of the table.
This side of the table. Because...
He's looking at me, everyone.
There's no reason to really get into a...
he glances at me.
A spitting match with Diego about Diego right now, just because, like, he's not playing as much. But I do want to get the... I do want to talk about him, because how does most 19-year-olds that have the hype that surround them like that react to being thrown off the pedestal like Diego has? So you got to give him credit, and I'm trying to give credit where credit is due. Okay?
Yeah, I know, Tom, you wanted more of a debate back and forth between me and Carl, but I don't disagree with anything Carl said. I mean, I don't knock Diego Fagundes for his persona or the person he is. I think he's overblown by a lot of people in the media. And
so
you know,
me included.
But he himself, for a 19-year-old, is a really level-headed kid, and I'm not gonna argue that. I mean, I'm not gonna argue with someone for the sake of arguing. So yes, I'm not the biggest Diego Fagundes fan in the world. But what Carl said was spot on. I mean, he's a really level-headed kid. I mean, I watched that MLS 36. He drinks like chocolate milk with his cereal in the morning.
Aw, that's
you
cute.
Know, like. He's a good kid. You know, I have never said he doesn't have the talent. He's not progressing the way I like to see, but whatever.
So there we go. And US, again, 2:45 today, seen a little bit. If you're already watching it, well, there you go. Two. Hope you've at least enjoyed the background noise while you got Taylor Twellman, who's just signed an 8-year extension on your TV, kid.
T. Taylor.
Watch us during halftime, too. Even though, I'll tell you what, Alexi Lawless is slowly becoming the Skip Bayless of soccer.
Alexi Lawless. All right, I'm not going to get into an Alexi topic. I can't. No. I can't do this. It is a Friday. I'm in a great mood. Epic Americans are about to be flooding everyone's brains and minds over in England. So I can't say anything. But I love Alexis. I love him. I wish that you still had the beard. I wish you still had the hair. And I wish that when you cut it all off, someone was able to preserve it in some sort of way so that we could just wander around the streets with, you know, a likeness of your
You have
great,
too much of an infatuation for Alexi Lawless.
I'm not going to say that the guy is not amazing, but the guy is amazing.
Brian will return on Tuesday.
He sings with a guitar. I can't sing with a guitar. Can you sing with a guitar? No. Ergo, by process of elimination, he is more advanced and more intelligent and more amazing than I. So there you go. Alexis. Yeah.
This is the same thing like Yergi Love, too, with Wilson.
Oh,
Yergi Love.
It's all about the Yergi Love. You just got to give the guy some love.
It's Jurgen Klinsmann. Yergi
okay.
Love is...
Yes, no. Jurgen Klinsmann does exist. And Yergi Love does exist as another separate entity. But in the context of football, when you apply Yergi Love to Jurgen Klinsmann, you are therefore sending love to Jurgen Klinsmann, and then he gets more empowered by that. He is... I don't want to make an analogy to God, but if somehow the God was empowered by prayers, every time you pray to him, he gets more empowered. Every time you send love to Jurgen, he gets more empowered and more emboldened. I shouldn't have made the metaphor to God. I apologize about that. All I'm trying to say is that when you use the term Jurgi Love, you, without even knowing it, you change the winds of fates for the better for the U.S. men's national team. And for Jurgen Klinsmann, Jurgen the German gaffer went to Craven Cottage Row.
This is that song
Everybody
singing stuff.
Knows
I might have to turn
that word gun.
Oh, damn. I actually, that was the end was.
I know it was.
The end was pretty good.
I'm done. You turned my mic back on, but I'm done. Peace out, y'all.
Brian returns Tuesday. Follow him at Brian_Speaks. Pitch Invasion of the Week returns next week as well. We'll have a full recap of today's game on New England Soccer Weekly tomorrow. Thank you to Carl Sutherland. Sutherland, thank you very much to Wilson Gibbons. Thank you very much to Will Blasini, who...
Schmuck.
At Willie Football, follow the legend himself. I'm Tom Quinlan. We'll see you on New England Soccer Weekly tomorrow at 15:10. Big news coming for 15:10.
USA, 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 ole, 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 ole. Let's go, US, ole, 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 ole. Oh, let's go, US, ole. Epic Americans, ole, ole, ole.
Be sure to follow the podcast on Twitter at Podcast Invaders. And don't miss out on all the soccer action on 1510 WUFC. Till next time, this has been the Pitch Invaders Podcast.
Wow.